Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 92, Sizzle and Serve. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's co-host, CJ Chris Johnston.
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
Things are going all right. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me on again. This is always a fun time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Glad to have you here. We are back, of course, to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. And boy, you can tell that E3 is less than a month away. The news is starting to drop fast and furious. We just had a mini Nintendo Direct, and we have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. We've also got this week's big topic, which is going to be controversial gaming opinions.
Ooh.
But before we get to that, let's kick things off with some news. Specifically, like I said, E3 is only a few weeks away, and not too long ago, Nintendo revealed some of what they're going to be doing for the show. Once again, they're not going to have a live press conference. They're just going to be a video presentation. They're calling it the Nintendo Spotlight E3 2017. That's going to be at 9 a.m. Pacific on June 13th. That's Tuesday, the first day of the show. And of course, they have confirmed that Super Mario Odyssey will be a huge part of the show. It's going to be playable. It's going to be there along with plenty of other stuff. They've also revealed that the Treehouse Live presentation will continue after their Nintendo Spotlight. It's going to showcase new games for Switch. It's going to showcase stuff for 3DS. And they're also going to intersperse competitions featuring ARMS and Splatoon 2 live from the show floor.
Awesome. I can't wait to see that stuff. I really enjoyed the Splatoon competition and the Nintendo Championships that they did a couple years back. It was just really fun to watch.
Yeah, that stuff is always pretty cool. They've done great stuff in the past. I'm still kind of bummed that they aren't having the press conference like they used to, but for the most part, this has worked out pretty well for them for the last few years. So I'm pretty psyched. I think they're going to have a pretty good show. I think they're going to have a lot of stuff to show off, unlike last year where they just had one big game to focus on. So I think this is going to be pretty exciting when E3 rolls around in just a few weeks.
Yeah, I'm excited too.
And speaking of Splatoon 2 and ARMS, as I said, there was a bit of a mini Nintendo Direct just earlier today as we record this, and they finally took the lid off of ARMS. They finally showed us all the characters, all the features, finally telling us everything that this game is about. What are your thoughts on ARMS as we now know it?
Well, I think when they debuted it back in January, I just wasn't quite sure how deep of a game we were going to get. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It looked like a pretty standard boxing game, but this Direct really focused on all the different ways that you can attack your opponent and all the different attachments you can get for your hands and the new characters, which look really awesome, bringing the total up to 10 characters.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
They even announced that they're going to, you know, like Splatoon on the Wii U, they're going to support it after launch with new characters, new stages, and a bunch of new stuff for the game. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that might be the most exciting thing to come out of this presentation, is to know they are going to keep supporting it. So even though we've got these 10 characters and all these weapons and all these modes, that they are going to keep giving us stuff down the pipeline. Now, for some people, that might make them take more of a wait-and-see approach to see how robust this thing finally becomes. But it is very exciting and it is very promising to know that they are planning to keep content coming down the pipeline. Now, prior to this event, we already knew about 7 of the fighters. They had announced 5 of them early on, then they revealed Min Min, then they revealed Helix, who's this weird-ass green-looking clay dude or something with a stretchy body.
My favorite character right there.
He's very bizarre, very, very bizarre. And then they announced 3 new characters today. There's Kid Cobra, who's like a snake man surfer guy. There are Bite and Bark, who is a robot cop and his robot dog, and somehow they work in unison to, you know, team up around the battlefield, and they even sort of merge together for a super attack of some sort. And then there is Twintel, who doesn't have springy arms but has springy hair instead. She's pretty crazy, even in a game with an overall pretty crazy cast of characters. Of these 3, who would you say is your favorite?
Of the new ones, I think Bite and Bark are my favorites. Mm. And how did nobody come up with that naming convention before? Just seems so perfect for a robot cop and his dog. It's great.
Yes, I suppose that's true. I guess of these new characters, Twintel is my favorite. The weird springy arms kind of creep me out, so I kind of like a character that has crazy springy hair, and it gives off a little bit of a Shantae vibe, too. So that's kind of neat.
Certainly.
We also found out more about the modes. There will indeed be an offline standard single-player mode. It's called Grand Prix, and in that one you fight 10 opponents in succession, kind of like a standard arcade mode. In the presentation, we got a very, very brief glimpse of what I assume is the final boss. They showed him just for a split second, all in shadow. It looks like he has a skull mask on and has six arms, apparently. That's pretty gnarly.
Yeah, I like how that looks. And this also, I mean, it's the arcade mode, but it gives off a very Street Fighter II vibe where, you know,
well, that's an arcade game, so
the boss sense. Character at the end is hidden in shadow, and he's not a playable character yet, but I assume that we will get to play as him at some point in the future.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he's an unlockable character or if he comes as added DLC down the road. In addition to that, there will be, of course, ranked matches, there will be party matches, and there will be a whole slew of different types of versus competition, like a hoops game where you're throwing your opponent through a net, a variation on volleyball, a 1 versus 100 survival mode, and then we got to see a little bit more of the 2-on-2 mode where apparently you're actually tethered to your partner, and you can get in friendly fire, so that could add up to some pretty crazy matchups.
Yeah, it looked crazy, and some of the videos that were posted after the Nintendo Direct from various press outlets who got to play the game early, they all looked really frantic and really interesting. I think also the party mode, this stood out to me, that you can have 20-player online matches. You can have like a lobby with 20 players.
Yeah, you can have 20 people in the lobby, but I guess the matches are only going to be 2-on-2.
That's
right. I guess, you know, it just, you know, mixes up the pairings, so you could be fighting one person or one pair, and then it'll just, you know, switch the opponents around, I guess, to sort of do, you know, some round robin style of play and get a whole bunch of variety of competition going there.
Yeah,
and yeah, that too sounds like it could be pretty nuts. It's going to be a lot to it, it seems.
That's pretty fantastic. We're going to have to get like a Power Pros room up and get 20 people battling. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, perhaps so. And you won't have to wait until the game comes out to try it out, because they are doing what they're calling a global test punch, kind of like the global test fire with Splatoon, and that's going to start on May 26th, just a little bit over a week away. They're going to have a demo you can download. I think it's available right now.
Sure is.
And you can grab it, and you can go online, and you can fight people at various times throughout that weekend, as well as another weekend in June.
Yeah, it's like two weekends in a row, and it's like the test fire, it's only at certain times of the day.
Yes, it's 5 a.m., 5 p.m., and 11 a.m. Pacific time on both those weekends. It should give people a great opportunity to try the game out before it launches, but CJ, you've actually already played it, right?
I have. I played a demo of the game at PAX East.
And what did you think?
Well, I was terrible at it, for one. I don't know if it was just that I was new to the motion controls, or maybe I was picking the wrong character or what, but I totally got my butt handed to me several times. So, but it was really fun for me. I'm probably going to play the game in single player more than multiplayer. So it was really important to me that we saw some of the single player stuff in this direct, and it looks interesting. I think I'm going to wait until the global test punch to make my final verdict on this, but I mean, I'll probably pick it up just because I'll need something to tide me over between now and Splatoon 2.
Yeah, I certainly understand where you're coming from. And I also understand what you mean about, you know, kind of getting your butt kicked, because that sort of happened to me when I had my chance to play the game. You know, I usually go for the power characters, but in this game I thought, well, I want to go for someone who's quick and speedy, can move around and land a lot of hits. That did not work out for me at all. I got totally beat down by the power character. So I think I'm going to have to change up my tactics a little bit if I'm going to be successful, or just learn how to maneuver better. Maneuvering with those motion controls was a little weird for me. So I'm still interested in either, you know, mastering these controls or trying the non-motion controls, if that really is still part of the game like it's supposed to be.
Yeah, they didn't really say much about that, but if you load up the Global Test Punch demo, it mentions that it's motion controlled and also can be controlled via these other methods. And they show the Joy-Con in handheld mode. So I'm assuming that you can control like that too. But in terms of how well it controls that way versus the motion control, I'm just not sure.
Yeah, it definitely remains to be seen. Now that everything's on the table, I'm still not 100% sold, so I've got to go hands-on with it a little bit more so I can decide if it's something I want to buy and invest a lot of time in, or whether it's something that's just not for me.
Yeah, you know what? I do love the character designs in ARMS, though. I think they're some of Nintendo's best, and all the characters really have amazing personality just in their design, especially Min Min. And
the noodle girl,
Helix, and Bite and Bark. I mean, they're just great characters.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if I feel quite as much affinity for them as you do, but they certainly stand out and they're all very distinct. I will give them that much for sure.
Yes.
Now, in addition to seeing all this new stuff about ARMS, we also got a new trailer for Splatoon 2, and as far as I could tell, it was all about the single-player experience. A lot of people were wondering, is there even going to be a single-player mode this time? And I thought that was crazy. Of course there's going to be single-player mode. The first one had such a great single-player mode, and I figured this one would too. And yes, judging by this trailer, it's going to be nuts. Freaky-looking enemies, all kinds of obstacles, platforming elements, big bosses, including a giant fat guy on a unicycle to fight.
Yeah, it was like visual overload in that trailer. Like, they just went from cut to cut. And I was trying to take it all in. Like, what am I looking at here?
I know.
I can't wait to play it, though. I mean, I loved the single-player mode in the original Splatoon on the Wii U. And I think a lot of people missed out on that. Obviously, they missed out on Splatoon since it was on the Wii U. But I think this looks like just what I wanted, an evolved form of the single player in the original with a lot of great new stuff. I'm super happy with what they showed.
Yeah, it's looking pretty darn cool, especially that rail grinding or paint grinding mechanic where you basically ride streams of paint through the air. That is brand new, right?
Yeah, that's completely new.
That was definitely the thing that stood out to me the most. That looked really neat.
That is new, yes.
The other thing that's cool about the story mode is that it focuses on Callie and Mari and is tied into the outcome of the final online Splatfest from Splatoon 1. Having a story that was directly influenced by the players like that is pretty awesome, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I loved the joke at the beginning where she says, oh, you know, don't feel starstruck. And the player character just has the blank look and she comments, oh, you don't remember me? Because I think a lot of people, their first exposure to Splatoon is going to be with this game. So I think that's a perfect little play on that whole thing.
Yeah, I felt a little bad for it, to be honest. But regardless, yeah, it just looked nuts. It looks really cool. And I think we're still only, you know, scratching the surface of this game. We've got a couple months until it comes out. But yeah, it's looking a whole lot of fun and very, very robust.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll get another test fire before it launches on the 21st of July.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. I would not be surprised at all.
It'd be nice to see some more maps, too. I'm sure they'll show some of that at E3. Then maybe we need another global test fire that has like a new map and maybe a couple more new weapons. That'd be perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will cross my fingers for that. I hope so, too. So we now know a lot about ARMS, we know a lot about Splatoon 2, but we don't necessarily know a lot about Nintendo's upcoming mobile offerings. And a rumor that's been flying around recently, this originated from the Wall Street Journal, and that is that there is a Zelda mobile title on the way. I wouldn't say this is exactly a big surprise, considering that Zelda is one of Nintendo's biggest properties, and it's regained a lot of mindshare thanks to Breath of the Wild, so it would be pretty foolish if they actually weren't working on a Zelda mobile title. But what are your thoughts on this rumor, CJ?
Well, I think it's fantastic. I think Nintendo can bring Zelda to mobile, and you could hit really any type of gameplay that you would normally find on mobile. It could be a match 3 rupee game. It could be
I hope not.
A Hyrule town builder or something like that. It could be a farming game. It could be an attacking game. Like, it could be a dungeon explorer. It could really be anything within the Zelda fiction. So I trust that they're going to make an interesting game out of it. It'll probably be something that appeals to more casual players, probably not your hardcore Zelda players, but really, who knows? I mean, they did Fire Emblem Heroes, and I think that certainly appealed to hardcore Fire Emblem fans who were open to free-to-play, because, of course, that's another thing that I'm sure this new Zelda game will also be. It'll most certainly be free-to-play. But
I wonder. I mean, they've kind of said that you know, the way that Fire Emblem was done was going to be, you know, different. They probably would do, you know, standard pricing for some of their other games. But considering how successful it's been, you know, maybe they're going to kind of backpedal on that. But it'd be interesting to see how they would do a free-to-play Zelda, or possibly depressing, depending on how it's done.
That's true. And I think when Super Mario Run came out, I think there were people who liked the $10 one-time price.
I mean, I'm glad they did it that way.
But, man, they got a lot of terrible user reviews. So
they did. They did.
Maybe they'll have to do like a hybrid between these two methods.
I wonder. But as far as the content of the game goes, you know, I don't think people should be expecting like a mobile version of Breath of the Wild, or even a mobile version of, you know, traditional top-down 2D Zelda.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you know, if we have to look at past Zelda titles and maybe try to get an idea of what this is going to be, and assuming it's not just some sort of, you know, match 3 minigame spin-off, but they really try to give us a mobile interpretation of Zelda, I would say that the DS titles are a good thing to look at. I mean, as far as controlling Zelda via a touchscreen goes, I think that is the blueprint right there. I don't think those games were perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but as far as being mobile, being touch only, being easy to pick up and play and accessible, I think they work really, really well. And if they did stick to that formula, I think that would be a pretty good move.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'd love to play a game like Spirit Tracks or Phantom Hourglass again. I thought the control in those with the touchscreen worked really well. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember even reading that in Japan, I got a lot of casual players playing Zelda games that that did not play them previously. So I could definitely see that being the case.
Yeah, I do hope it is. And also, though, I don't think it would be a big, you know, open world like we expect from Zelda. I would think maybe they might take some ideas from Triforce Heroes and break it down into stages kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe they would include multiplayer, but probably not. But still, I could see something that's sort of a hybrid of Triforce Heroes and Phantom Hourglass, and I think that would work really, really well for taking the spirit of Zelda and condensing it down into mobile form.
Definitely agree.
But right now, it is still just a rumor. We're awaiting confirmation, but I mean, come on, it's Zelda. How could they not bring one of their biggest properties over to mobile in the near future?
Yeah, do you think this will hit before or after Animal Crossing comes to mobile?
Well, Animal Crossing is supposed to be the next one. It's been taking its sweet time, but I'm going to say Animal Crossing will come next.
Yeah, I think you're right. Although, who knows if they want to try to time that with the release of an Animal Crossing game on Switch. That's the only thing that could hold that up.
Yeah, that would kind of make sense too, but I guess we'll see. Mm-hmm. Switching gears a bit to some third-party news, we found out from the folks at WayForward that Shantae Half-Genie Hero is making its way to Switch. It was released previously, of course, on the Wii U, as well as other platforms, but now we found out it is coming to Nintendo's current system, both digitally from WayForward themselves, and also in physical form from the folks over at XSEED. It's going to basically be the same game, but they're going to be adding in 150, they say, 150 special HD Rumble events. Oh. I'm not sure what HD Rumble events really mean, but I do love the HD Rumble. I think it's been underutilized so far, and I can't wait to see what someone like WayForward does to, you know, amp up the excitement in Shantae.
How do you come up with 150 HD Rumble events?
I don't know. I don't even really know what that means. What is an event? Is it an action you're doing? Is it all like cutscenes or something?
Yeah.
And I mean, as much as I love Shantae, I'm not sure how well it really lends itself to the HD Rumble. I mean, you can actually like feel getting hair whipped or something. I guess you wouldn't, because Shantae does the hair whipping, but that's right. I don't know. Have you played this game before?
I have played it on PS4. I backed the Kickstarter. And I got PS4 copy, and I enjoy it a lot. I think this probably works better as a Switch game to take with you on the go. I like the Shantae series, but I have put it down in favor of other more graphically intensive games on the PS4. And I think it is right at home, along with a lot of other indies, on Switch.
Yeah, I think the Switch would be a great home for it. Personally, I loved it on Wii U. It was one of my favorite games to come out last year. I played the heck out of it. You know, I'm still waiting for some of the new features to come through, like, you know, being able to play as Risky Boots, the villain. But if I get to play that on the Switch instead of on the Wii U, that is fine with me. I will very likely buy this game again because it is great, and it seems like it'll be even better in hybrid console handheld form and with HD Rumble added to it.
Definitely. As long as they don't have the HD Rumble turned up to 11 like so many initial releases of various indie games over the last 2 months have had.
Indeed, indeed. Also on the way is Harvest Moon: Light of Hope. That is coming to Switch probably this year. This is going to be the 20th anniversary of Harvest Moon being released in North America. So I think that the folks at Natsume do want to get it out this year, although they haven't 100% confirmed it as far as I know. Anyway, it is, of course, another game all about farming. You know, you grow your crops, you raise your livestock. But the story is a little bit different this time in that now you're shipwrecked in a harbor town and you need to rebuild the town, save the lighthouse. It's not just about saving the farming spirits. I like that they have this new shipwreck lighthouse thing built into the storyline. It makes a little bit of differentiation, makes things a little bit more interesting, makes it not feel like it is the same old game that we've seen so many times in the past. They haven't shown any screenshots yet, but they say it is Super NES inspired, again, tying into that 20th anniversary of when the game first appeared. CJ, do you play much Harvest Moon? Are you looking forward to this one?
You know, I have never played a Harvest Moon game.
Oh my gosh.
I have always looked at the screenshots and the character art and thought, you know, I should give that a try, but I just, I never have. So, I mean, maybe the time to jump in is on the Switch.
Yeah, it very well might be. It's a great platform for it. It makes a ton of sense. I just hope that it really does show up, unlike Harvest Moon Seeds of Memories, which was supposed to be the game that was on Wii U and ended up never coming out. It ended up being mobile only.
Hmm.
But assume we don't have any snafus like that. Yeah, I think it would be right at home. I am curious as to what this Super NES-inspired graphical style is going to be like, as well as, you know, what features are going to be in there. Is it going to have the terrain-altering mechanic that's been in the last couple of 3DS Harvest Moon games? It'll be interesting to see all the features that end up being included in this title.
Yeah, and I think the portability is, with this type of game, is just key. Like, to be able to bring it with you and play it on your lunch hour or in the morning when you wake up. I mean, it's perfect for that. And I'm also looking forward to Stardew Valley for the same reason.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
The competition's going to be a little tough with that one coming to Switch.
And with Animal Crossing, you never know.
Well, I certainly welcome having diversity of titles and people being able to choose. And, you know, competition's always good. It'll cause everybody to raise their game a little bit, I think.
Agreed.
So yeah, looking forward to seeing what Natsume has for that one. We also found out more about Sega's upcoming Sonic game on Switch, Sonic Forces. And the big news about that is the third play style. Previously, we already knew that there was going to be 2D classic Sonic and 3D modern Sonic. And now I found the third play style. My bet was on Sonic Boom, but boy, I could not have been more wrong. It is about creating your own custom character for the third play style. And basically, it just looks like someone's Sonic fan fiction exploded into this game.
It sure does.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never felt like I wanted to be in a Sonic game or one of Sonic's dozen lame friends. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, people are always like, oh, I want to be Sonic. I want to be Sonic. I don't really want to be the other characters. But seriously, if it came down to being Knuckles or Amy or Tails or being just some weird Sonic character I made up, I think I would definitely opt for the existing characters.
Yeah.
You know, this really isn't something that gets me very excited. However, I know that there is a big set of Sonic fans online. All I have to do is check DeviantArt and you will know that there are lots of people that love making their own original Sonic characters. And this lets you do it. You choose the species, you choose the character's color, the outfit, you know, shoes, gloves, goggles, gear. And then you get to use gadgets like a grappling hook and a flamethrower to lay waste to the bad guys. So, It's weird. It's a little creepy.
It is, and I wonder if that character is going to be silent or voiced or what the deal with that is. And then
yeah, there could be a variety of voices to choose from. You never know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I do hope that it's not as buggy as the last couple Sonic games have been.
Well, the last Sonic game, Sonic Boom Fire and Ice, I thought was actually pretty decent.
That was on 3DS though, right?
Yes. Yes, okay. It was.
Yeah.
But this one, you know, I think, is being made by the core Sonic team, the same guys that did Generations, which was awesome.
True.
And in a lot of ways, this looks like a continuation of that, but now with the inclusion of these crazy-looking original characters. So I'm kind of hopeful for the game, but boy, this is just weird.
You know, sometimes people like to race as their Mii characters in Mario Kart, and, you know, I don't say anything bad about that, even though I don't want to do that personally, really. So this is sort of an extension of that, and if people can make Sonic their own, then I'm all for that, even though I probably wouldn't get into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really my thing, but I do think that Sega knows their audience. They know that there are people who love making original characters and the fan fiction, and so I think that's who they put this out here for. So, you know, if you love classic Sonic, you love modern Sonic, or you love just making your own characters, it's all going to be there. So I guess we shall see how it all pans out. I'm still more excited for Sonic Mania myself, but as a Sonic fan, you know, I'll still be keeping my eye on Sonic Forces for sure.
Yeah, agreed. And I hope Mania comes out soon.
Mm-hmm.
It got delayed a little bit last time, but I hope it's still before the end of the summer.
Yes, me too. Me too. But speaking of anthropomorphic animals, over on Kickstarter, you can donate your hard-earned cash to a new game that might be coming to Switch called Project Rap Rabbit. It is a rhythm rapping game collaboration between Nana Onshaw, the folks that made Parappa the Rapper, and Inus, the guys that made Elite Beat Agents. Of course, you play as a rabbit, and it's in feudal Japan, and it's like merging this feudal Japanese stuff with modern stuff with rapping, and it's supposed to have rap battles where you rap back and forth. You can sort of change the lyrics on the fly. It's so ridiculous and crazy sounding that I'm very intrigued. But, you know, some of the way that the campaign has gone so far has not been the greatest. CJ, what are your thoughts on this game so far?
Well, when they announced the Kickstarter, I immediately went to the page and looked at the stretch goals and was horrified to find that the Switch stretch goal was way down at the 4-something million dollar mark, which...
Well, it was.
It was. They changed
anymore.
It. Mm-hmm. They revised the stretch goals and moved the Switch version down a little bit, but it's still a stretch goal.
Yeah, it's still a stretch goal. It's like 1.1 million to make the game, and then about 1.5 million to get it on Switch.
Yeah.
And you know, so far, it has not got a lot of momentum. It only made about 10% of what they needed the last time I checked. But, you know, I do kind of hope that they're able to, you know, gain some momentum, because I would like to see this game exist, but they just really haven't shown very much yet. They haven't shown any gameplay. What they've talked about sounds really cool, though. I think the art style is really cool, but it's a rhythm game, and they haven't given us any music to actually listen to yet. I think that is kind of a key ingredient that's missing from this campaign.
Yeah, I think that's true. And then the reward tiers start at like $30, so you can't just, you know, throw in $15 or whatever. I mean, I guess you can, but you won't get a copy of the game. And I did back it because I really would like to see a collaboration between Nana Onshaw and Innes. But I just don't know. The way that they've kind of mishandled the campaign so far and the fact that they're only planning 6 stages in the game would make it fairly short.
I guess. Parappa only had 6 stages, though, and it was still great.
Parappa's pretty short, though.
It is.
Like, it's no Elite Beat Agents.
This is true.
So I'm just not sure. I would love to see it happen. They started their Kickstarter campaign, and they already announced that they're working with a publisher, but it's also not clear, like, what the publisher's benefit to backers is. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the overall benefit to the project? I mean, obviously, they're bringing their expertise in terms of working with the platform holders, but I really would have hoped that they would have said, oh, well, we'll match the funds that you're able to raise on Kickstarter, so that it sort of elevates the whole project and means that backers are going to get a much better game out of it. They didn't do that, so I think that's a huge misstep too. But I would really like to see this project happen.
Yeah, me too. Like I said, it sounds so ridiculous and so crazy that, you know, I think it just might work. I have to admit, the last game that we got from Nana Onshaw on a Nintendo system, that being Major Minor's Majestic March on Wii, was pretty terrible. But from what they've said about this game, I think it sounds very, very promising. So despite the not great campaign elements you were mentioning, I too would like to see it get funded, and I'd like to see it come to Switch, and cross my fingers that it actually happens.
Me too.
That takes care of our news discussion for this week. Let's change gears a little bit and talk about some game impressions. Specifically, a new game for 3DS I've been playing that just came out this week. That is the latest game in the Cooking Mama series, Cooking Mama Sweet Shop. This entry in the series is a lot like past games, but it focuses solely on desserts, as the name implies. Cakes, cookies, donuts, pudding, churros, truffles, tarts, cheesecake, caramel apples, cupcakes, weird Japanese stuff I would never touch with a 4-foot fork. I don't know, are you getting hungry already?
Yes.
Yeah, the game, you know, even though it's on 3DS, the food looks very tasty. It makes me want to go out and eat all kinds of junk food. Like I joked on Twitter, I think I've gained 10 pounds just looking at the screenshots and the images.
I haven't played a Cooking Mama game since the first one. I would imagine the gameplay has evolved a little bit since then.
Not really. Not really.
No?
It is very, very much the same as it was before. I mean, the biggest difference from the original is that the first game was pretty challenging. You had to do some pretty amazing finger gymnastics to get all your recipes done and get the gold medals and all that stuff. Hmm. And it was quite a challenge. I think they decided that was just too tough, and for who they want to be the game's audience, they shouldn't make it nearly that difficult. So all the games since then have been a whole lot easier, a whole lot more forgiving, but all of them have sort of, you know, followed the same mini-game mold. You're imitating the motions to perform various cooking tasks, whether it's stirring or sifting or chopping or grating or kneading or adding ingredients. And of course, since you're making desserts, there's lots and lots of decorating, you know, putting on toppings and whipped cream and stuff like that. You know, sometimes you have to do things really fast. Sometimes it's very methodical, just like the real cooking procedure. And then sometimes there are things that aren't recreations of actual cooking. It's just some arcade style mini game, like, oh, look, there's a whole bunch of ingredients just rolling across the counter. You've got to tap the right ones or something like that. So it's pretty, you know, bizarre and kooky like that. But I did have fun playing all the mini games. It is well made. I like doing that sort of thing. I also, you know, happen to enjoy food and cooking games and just find it very amusing. I don't think I am the the main audience for this. I think they are probably aiming at younger players, maybe a predominantly female audience. But hey, there are other people who will certainly enjoy the game. But I've been playing a whole bunch of, you know, exploration and fantasy and sword swinging games recently, and this is sort of a nice change of pace. You can just do something that's kind of relaxing, and you can kick back and just make some delicious cupcakes for a while.
Yeah, it seems like a good palate cleanser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. While it is fun, I do wish that there were a hard mode. I find that I can accomplish my tasks in about half the time that you are given. So if they sped up that timer by about, you know, twice as fast in hard mode, I think that would make it more appealing to a wider variety of gamers, just as an option, of course. The other big thing I've always wanted since the beginning is just more structure. Every time a new Cooking Mama game comes out, I'm hoping for a better structure, but instead, you just make recipe after recipe, you earn a medal, you unlock a new recipe, and on you go. And I just wish there were more to it, like, you know, you're in some sort of cooking competition or something. Hmm. I just want something more than the loose collection of recipes that they've always had. And I was hoping they were going to do that with the world tour mode in this game. Like, oh, world tour, that sounds interesting. It sounds like maybe you're going around and, you know, have to perform well enough at various events. But it's not at all. It's actually just a series of mini games. And they're actually fairly challenging, at least if you want to get a high score and unlock some new outfit or something for Mama, which is weird because who wants to unlock the outfits? Well, probably the younger players, the ones that care more about unlockable outfits for Cookie Mama. I don't care about that. And it's like the hardest thing to do in the game.
That's weird.
It is. I mean, there's lots of stuff you unlock just from playing it. As I said, lots of recipes and then lots of decorations for your kitchen or your shop. That's the other aspect of the game, is there is a shop mode. But again, you don't really do much there. Customers come in, they wander around, they'll look for a dessert they want, and they basically just tap them. You tap them and they give you money, and that's all there is to it. There's really no gameplay or even the slightest bit of technique involved when you're doing that. So that also would have been nice to have been fleshed out a little bit more.
It's too bad. It seems like a missed opportunity there.
Yeah, I just feel like all these games have the potential to be more than what they are, but they're very content to just sit with this very, very familiar formula. Regardless, I did enjoy it. It's been a few years since I played a Cooking Mama game, but they're still very appealing. And though I have to admit, it's probably not to everybody's tastes. Ha ha ha, everybody's tastes, get it? But it's cute, it's relaxing, it's accessible, it's fun. And so if you like that kind of thing, it's another solid entry in the series.
Nice.
Well, this seems like a good place to take an intermission. So let's do that. And then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is controversial gaming opinions. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is controversial gaming opinions. Everybody has games that they like, they have games that they don't like. It seems like, everybody loves certain series. Zelda has universal appeal. The Mario series has universal appeal. But there are always outliers. There are certain series that I might not be the biggest fan of, or some games that I like more than others. And I'm sure the same is true with you, right, CJ?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I thought, well, let's talk about some of these. At the risk of losing my entire listenership, I will admit what some of these controversial or perhaps unpopular gaming opinions are, at least when it comes to games on Nintendo systems.
This is such a positive show. I've listened to all 90-some episodes, and this is like the most positive Nintendo show or gaming podcast
well,
ever.
Thank you.
And now we're going to be negative.
Well, are we? That not necessarily, because let me tell you my first one. My first controversial, unpopular gaming opinion is that I actually really like a game that most people don't. And that is Metroid Other M. That's right.
Whoa.
That is my first stance. I'm saying Metroid Other M is not as bad as everybody thinks it is. Now, that doesn't mean that I think the game is great or anything. I acknowledge that it has plenty of problems, not the least of which is the story. They made Samus be kind of terrible, and they kind of just dropped some important plot points. And then they have those weird first-person pixel hunt scenes. And then the controls are just weird, like having to play candy bar style with the Wii remote and then aim it at the screen. I wish you could have played remote and nunchuck style.
Yeah.
So, you could easily just, aim at the screen when it's time to go into the first person missile mode. I'm not even sure the first person missile mode is a good idea. Anyway, so I'm talking about all the negative things about it. But if you look beyond that, I think the game is actually quite enjoyable. And even though there's bad stuff for maybe 10% of the game. The rest is really good. It's traditional Metroid. It's got great exploration. It's got some really fun maps to explore. It's got some cool challenges. It's got familiar enemies presented in new ways. It's got fun boss encounters. And, Team Ninja is no slouch when it comes to the action department. They make pretty good games, so it's not surprising that, to me at least, it plays very, very well. So, sure, there are bad things about it, but, once you get into the gameplay and you get that core Metroid experience, there's actually a whole lot to enjoy. At least that's my take on Other M.
Yeah, I think it probably sounded like a great project on paper, and then when the game was finished, and especially the English cutscenes came out, mm-hmm. and people just facepalmed at that stuff. I mean, I think that stuff, the presentation of the game, really impacted people's opinion of the whole package and kind of soured it. And mm-hmm. I do agree with you. It does have some good gameplay. But, yeah, man, the story really soured the whole thing. And it's not like Metroid has
baby,
to have...
The baby.
Yeah, it's not like Metroid has to have, like, some complicated story that has a ton of voice acting or cutscenes. Mm-hmm. But so I think that was probably a mistake. But I like the fact that they, took a series like Metroid and did something so different with it. Like giving it to Team Ninja to make their take on it.
Yes. But, I mean, they do stick pretty close to the Metroid formula in a lot of ways.
Well, so sure.
If you're a Metroid fan, certainly give it a chance. Try to ignore those terrible cutscenes and just enjoy the good aspects, because there are a lot of them. I will tell you, sometime after Other M came out, I had an opportunity to talk with some of the folks at Team Ninja. And I was like, man, so can you tell me anything about, what was going on with the story? And, how come, some of the plot points never got resolved? And they were just like, that was totally Nintendo. They tried to totally wash their hands of that aspect of the game. They were kind of throwing Nintendo under the bus a little bit. But still, despite that, I think it's way better than most people think. It's not a 9, it's not a 10, but it's, not a 5 either, so.
I agree with that, yeah.
Anyway, what's one of your controversial opinions?
All right, so this one we're going to go back to the Nintendo 64 era. Okay. And focus in on GoldenEye 007, which a lot of people love.
Yes.
GoldenEye. And a lot of people
have
wanted...
It's an all-time classic.
Well, I'm gonna differ from that opinion. I just never really got into it. I played it in mostly multiplayer situations at friends' mm-hmm. houses, but mm-hmm. I never really was able to get into it or even really see what people liked about it, since the graphics were so plain, and I thought it was really the Bond.
A lot of N64 games were.
That's true, but I thought the Bond license was the only thing interesting about the game. I think
really?
I think people wanted to be James Bond, and so they sort of thought that it was a better game than it actually was. And Perfect Dark as well. I just never could get into first-person shooters on console before the Xbox era, really. And part of that probably was the controls. But I never purchased GoldenEye and only played it at other people's houses, and just I wasn't all that into it. I was ready to go back to Mario Kart 64 whenever people were like, oh, let's play one more round. It's like, what about Mario Kart? It's right there. Man. We could play more of that. So.
Well, I suppose I can see where you're coming from. I certainly would play Mario Kart 64 over GoldenEye myself. Mario Kart 64 being, probably my favorite entry in the series up until Mario Kart 7 and 8 came out.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm not the biggest first-person shooter fan out there, but just seeing how much fun, like, my brother had with it and a lot of his friends and a lot of my other friends, I know that, it really did change the landscape and introduced first-person shooters to a lot of players that had never played them before.
That's
but,
true.
But, if that is your opinion on that, I am not going to knock it.
All right.
I certainly have some controversial opinions when it comes to the Nintendo 64 myself, and one of those is... I actually like Super Mario 64 less than I like Super Mario Sunshine. That's right. I'm saying I actually prefer Super Mario Sunshine to Mario 64.
What is it about Sunshine that appeals to you more? It's not just graphics, right? It's got to be something.
Well, the graphics have a lot to do with it. The camera has a ton to do with it. As groundbreaking and revolutionary as Mario 64 was on the N64, that camera and just having to, you know, tap those buttons to, you know, move at 90 degree angles was really wonky and kind of clunky and cumbersome. I'm not going to say that Sunshine's camera was perfect either, but I think it was a great improvement. Also, I really, really loved those straightforward, pure platforming sections that they introduced into Sunshine. So it had the big, wide open, you know, exploration-based levels where you could sort of do anything. And then it had those really cool, challenging platforming stages. The fact they had those in there at all, but the way that they broke it up and balanced it like that really, really appealed to me. So I know that, you know, most people, you know, are kind of down on Sunshine, comparatively speaking. But yeah, when it comes to those two games, I'm actually more of a Sunshine fan, believe it or not.
Okay, I could see that. I mean, I think a lot of people nowadays, they have rose-tinted glasses on in regards to Mario 64, because it was such a groundbreaking game, but it was so early in...
wall jumping, that's another reason. The wall jumping was so freaking hard in Mario 64, and it was a breeze in Sunshine. That's another reason I like Sunshine better.
That's true, yeah. I could see that.
Sorry, okay. I interrupted you. But while we're on the Nintendo 64, my next controversial opinion is that the original Super Smash Brothers was not actually very good.
I agree with you.
Oh my gosh.
I totally agree. It was fun.
Oh my goodness.
It was fun, but yeah, I thought it was just a weird game because the whole toy thing was weird and
the graphics, I forgot about that. The graphics were not great, but it just moved too fast for me. I mean, if you tilted your stick all the way to the side, it was just out of control and you were just like running off the ledge and tripping and falling, and it just felt very, very spazzy. And I was like, oh man, you know, how are people enjoying this? Is it just because of the combination of the different characters and different universes? Is that the only reason people are playing this? Yeah, I just could not get into it. I did not own that game on the N64 back in the day. And I was really, really happy when the GameCube version came out and things got slowed down just a tad and kind of fixed everything I disliked about the N64 game. And that turned me into a huge fan of the series, but I was not sold on it when it comes to the N64 original. I will go on record and say the first Smash was trash.
The first Smash was trash. That's
harsh. It's not really true, but it does. It sounds good, so I'm saying
it. Sure does. Yeah, I never picked that one up on N64 either, and it was another situation where I played multiplayer at friends' houses, and it was fine. But I really love the GameCube version, and I think you're right. The pacing of the GameCube version and the control of the GameCube version just makes it. It's like the N64 game was a prototype, and we got the real game with the GameCube version.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So what is next on your controversial gaming opinions list?
Well, I'm going to rewind all the way back to the summer of 1994.
Okay.
The Super NES era, yes. And I got a job during the summer at Electronic Gaming Monthly that summer.
Okay.
So that was a lot of fun. But before that, I got Stunt Race FX for my birthday on the Super Nintendo.
Okay.
And I know a lot of people that dislike this game, including the EGM reviewers. They all panned it. And it may have been that I received it for my birthday and I wasn't, getting a lot of games at that time. So when you were younger, of course, when you got a game, you really played a lot of it and you tried to like it. Maybe that's the situation that was going on here. But I really like Stunt Race FX, even though so many people seem to dislike it or not enjoy it, even though it's a racing game where the cars have eyes and it runs at less than 10 frames a second and looks
horrible. That was an early Super FX chip game.
Mm-hmm. It was, right after Star Fox Stunt Race FX came out. And I really enjoyed it, and I mastered maybe all of the courses in the game. And at one point, During the summer, I was working at EGM, and they had a trick for Stunt Race FX that required you to get a certain time. And I was like, I got this. Like, step back.
Nice.
This is no problem. So I have good memories of Stunt Race FX, even though it is not one of the well-loved games on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I have to admit, it never really stood out to me. I know I tried it. I'm pretty sure I rented it from Blockbuster or something and tried it out, and it didn't really do a lot for me. I don't recall hating it, but it certainly didn't stick with me. Was it especially challenging? Do you remember?
It was, in part because the control was terrible. But I don't know. It's just, I like racing games. I like arcade-style racing games, and this one, for some reason, just really struck a chord with me.
All right, cool. Well, I guess I will move on to a game that I really, really liked, even though, you know, some people consider it to be, you know, the black sheep of its series. And that is Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. I absolutely love that game. It is one of my favorite NES games. I don't know if it's one of my favorite in the Zelda series, but it's certainly up there. And for some reason, every time something comes back, you know, whether it's the NES Classic or Virtual Console or whatever, I feel compelled to buy this game again and start playing through it again. This was the first Zelda game I really, really loved. Not the original. For some reason, I played the original. I'm like, okay, well, this is neat, but I don't know. It's not really my thing. But then Zelda 2 came out, and I was so into it. Part of the reason is that I just liked the side view a whole lot better. I love the fact that you could jump. I love the fact that it was just sort of a more traditional action-adventure platformer. Where it's a top-down view for the original Zelda, for some reason, kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I did learn to appreciate the original Zelda later, of course, but not back in the 80s. But yeah, I just really, really got into this game, and it was like the perfect game. It was like, oh, they made a Zelda game just for me. They strayed from the formula a little bit, and they just made a game that really appealed to all my sensibilities. You know, I loved the graphics, I loved the music, I loved the exploration. And even the difficulty didn't really bother me that much. I mean, a lot of people don't like the way it deviated from the formula, and a lot of people don't like the challenge, but it was pretty early for me as far as NES games that I got. So I just figured that, you know, every game was that hard. So it wasn't like, oh, this is so ridiculous that every time you continue, no matter where you are, you get sent back to the beginning. It's like, okay, well, that just seems normal. And it was, you know, really hard for me, but it, you know, taught me a lot about playing games and helped me get good, I guess, because it was so darn difficult. But yeah, I just loved that mix of side-scrolling action and Zelda formula. Yeah. I would love to see them make a remake of that game.
Yeah, I think they should do a remake of that game. And maybe, I mean, they remade Fire Emblem Gaiden, right? So I think almost anything's possible. I would like to see them take another stab at that, because I think I read some interview with Miyamoto where he never was really happy with the way Zelda 2 turned out. I'd love to see them fix some of the problems in that game, because I, you know, I think a lot of people, myself included, do think it was too difficult of a game. And I did appreciate the mix-up in formula, but I would like to have seen the difficulty even out a little bit more. I think I would have better memories of that game if that had been the case. I am on the side of I don't like that game. But I'm open to playing a remake, for sure.
Here's my pro tip. Shield, shield, shield. Always use shield.
Then that's what I was doing wrong. Oh my gosh.
Took me a long time to realize God used the shield spell a lot. That'll prevent a lot of unnecessary deaths.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do love me some Zelda 2.
I played Zelda 2 stages in NES Remix, and some of them were fine, and some of them reminded me of why I don't like that game.
All right. Well, what is what's your next controversial opinion?
All right. So Rare.
Yes.
Redesigned Donkey Kong in their own image in the mid-90s, and Donkey Kong Country looked a certain way, and I...
Yep, it was a huge success.
It was.
You know, put the Super Nintendo back on the map in a lot of ways in their fight against the Genesis in the console wars of the time.
That's very true, but I could not dislike the Donkey Kong redesign that Rare did more than I do. I mean, it's
now you're
just
talking about the Donkey Kong character himself?
Yes, the characters, well, any of the characters from Donkey Kong Country, I think, are fairly terribly designed.
I'm not sure this is a controversial opinion.
Is it?
Well,
I thought was back in the day. Anyway, because a lot of people love those games. And I mean, maybe they don't love the design of the characters, but
I certainly don't have any complaints about the redesign of Donkey Kong. I think he is fine. Mm-hmm. I'm perfectly happy with Diddy, and I'm perfectly happy with Dixie. But almost everybody else, I would agree, is absolutely awful. And it just kept getting worse and worse as the series went on.
Yeah.
And of course, that culminated in Donkey Kong 64 with Lanky Kong and Chunky Kong and Tiny Kong. Oh, don't even get me started with Candy Kong, right? That was the name of Donkey Kong's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. And she was like in all the games, and she was just horrifying in so many ways. They tried to make a sexed up monkey. It was just so disturbing.
Yeah. I definitely preferred the design, like on the box art for the Game Boy Donkey Kong game. Like, I thought that was a much better Donkey Kong design. I love that sort of classic Nintendo character design that had gone out the window when Rare took the character and did what they did with it.
Mm.
And in the early 2000s, I had a chance to interview Miyamoto, and I told him that I hated the Donkey Kong redesign that Rare had done, and please go back to the old classic Nintendo style. And he was genuinely surprised. He thought that people really liked the designs for the Donkey Kong Country characters. So, yeah, and I mean, they've refined them since. Tropical Freeze and the later games have improved on a lot of that. But I think some of the precedent was set by Rare and hasn't really evolved all that much. But I think that the 90s were a very dark time for Donkey Kong's design.
Well, like I said, I'm still okay with that first initial cast. But Rare made a lot of lame character design choices. So I will have to agree with you on at least some level. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And speaking of things that we just don't like, okay, I have a confession to make. I just do not like the Lego series of games.
All right.
I have tried, but I just can't get into them, whether it's Star Wars or Indiana Jones or Marvel superheroes or DC superheroes. Just every single one of them, it just seems like there's no great level design. The challenge comes from all the wrong things. I feel like you have infinite lives and constant respawns because they couldn't do proper difficulty balance. And call me crazy, but for me, the humor is always a total miss. It's just not my kind of sense of humor at all. Back when they didn't have the voices, I felt that way. Now that they do have the voices, I feel that way. It just totally misses the mark for me. I mean, I'm not a fan of slapstick comedies, and this kind of sort of falls into this category for me. It's very similar. But, there's just humor that some people like or they don't. And this is the kind that I just don't. So, Lego games, not for me. I admit, I have not ever played Lego City Undercover. So maybe that would totally change things up. And I actually did buy Lego Dimensions because, the A-Team is in there. And I haven't played that yet. So maybe that could change my mind. But
I don't think
all
it's going
to
change
played,
your mind.
Not so much.
I don't think it'll change your mind, Chris. I think. the Lego games, at the heart of them, they're mainly for kids, right? And I think a lot of
They are. They're for younger kids, and they are great for, kids to play with their parents and things like that. And they certainly have that purpose and fill that niche pretty well. But is the gameplay actually good? Not to me.
I think you're right. I mean, the gameplay, if it was, targeted at adults, and I think, you could look at a game like Knack on the PS4, which has gameplay quite similar to the Lego games, where it's very repetitive and very simplistic, and on the PS4, people did not like that at all, even though...
That got pretty badly hammered.
Yeah, I felt like it was exactly the Lego game gameplay, and people love the Lego games, but I think, you know, maybe the Lego games, people like them because of the license, or they like them because they can play them with their kids. The gameplay is never too difficult on purpose, because if you've tried playing a Lego game with a 5-year-old like I have with my daughter, she is pretty limited in terms of, you know, when they mix up the mechanics. She gets a little confused, so, and I usually have to do those sections. So you really have to make them simplistic, and yeah, they're not challenging. Yeah, the humor is bad, but...
Well, at least I'm not alone on that point.
I personally like Lego City Undercover, but Lego City Undercover's humor probably would not be a hit with you either.
I'd still have to give it a try sometimes, and I've heard so many good things, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough sell, I confess.
Yes.
What's next for you?
So we're going back to the SNES era again, another Super FX game.
Okay.
So Star Fox, the only Star Fox game that I like is the original Super Nintendo game.
Okay.
I thought Star Fox 64, while it was okay, I thought it was too short, and I have never liked a Star Fox game outside the Super Nintendo one. They don't hit with me. It feels like a lot of the same stuff. And, you know, I really enjoyed the Super Nintendo game. Maybe it was because of the 3D graphics at the time. Clouded my judgment. But,
well, I remember the 3D graphics at the time. Like, oh, man, these are really hard to look at. I can't wait till polygonal graphics get better.
That's true. But for some reason, I always just go back to the original Star Fox, as that's the one that I liked, and the rest are eh.
Huh. That is kind of surprising and controversial. You would take that one over Star Fox 64 or the 3DS remake. Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I definitely would like to see that game make a comeback in some form. Like I mentioned a couple episodes ago, it'd be great to get that on Virtual Console or on this rumored Super NES Classic system or something like that.
Definitely. If they make one of those, if they make a Super NES Classic, they have to have Star Fox on there, right?
I certainly hope so.
They can't just avoid Super FX games forever. Like, they have to do something.
I mean, if anyone can figure it out, it's Nintendo. So
yeah.
Okay, moving on to my next controversial opinion. I actually like random battles in RPGs.
What?
Yes, that's right. I like random battles. I don't mind getting interrupted in my exploration and having a random turn-based battle. And that's not to say that I dislike other kinds of battles in RPGs. I like variety. I like, you know, being able to see the enemy on screen and then you bump into him and that initiates the fight. I also like in Chrono Trigger, where all the fights occur pretty much at predetermined spots. But I also like just totally random battles. I think having that diversity in RPGs is what makes them fun and different and interesting. And if all of them were the same way, sure, that would suck. But just having random battles on their own does not bother me one bit. I mean, too many encounters, yeah, that can be a problem. But taken on their own, I actually do enjoy random battles. Yes, it's true.
Yeah, the last time I really enjoyed random battles was in Bravely Default, where you could change the percentage possibility that they would occur.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. Like, sometimes when you're grinding in an RPG, you want a lot of battles. And sometimes when you're trying to get to a town to get a potion to heal, you don't want random battles.
So yeah.
It is certainly a mix. I thought Bravely Default handled it very well in a more modern way. But, you know,
that's a good point.
Personally, I don't mind random battles either, but I do like that a lot of the newer Dragon Quest games have the enemies visible on screen, too.
Yeah, like I said, I think that just mixing things up and having variety keeps things interesting. If they're all of one type, then, you know, that's boring. But having random battles in there and, you know, having it done in a good way, like you mentioned with Bravely Default, you know, I think it can still be fun. So, yeah, that is my final controversial gaming opinion for this segment.
That's too much controversy for one episode of Power Pros.
Yes, it's definitely a break from the norm. But there, we got it all out. We will try to be more controversy-free when we come back next episode.
I hope the listeners will forgive you, because, you know, I probably won't be on the next episode, but you'll have to struggle through.
Yes, hopefully we'll still have listeners after they've learned my deepest, darkest secrets of enjoying random battles and liking Zelda 2 and liking Other M and not liking Lego games.
Other M especially. That's the worst one.
Please, listeners, don't hate me. Please come back. But yeah, I guess that wraps up our big topic for this week. And that pretty much wraps up this week's show. But before we go, we still have time for one more thing. And that is a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the NES version of Joe and Mac. Just when you thought it was safe to go back into the jungle, it started out as a warm, peaceful summer day. Joe was lying in the green grass, daydreaming about brontosaurus burgers, while Mac was away hunting for dinosaurs. Hungry and relaxed, Joe returns to the village. But wait, where are all the cave women? And where is all the food? That bogus bunch of Neanderthal nerds must have kidnapped the cave women and eaten the food. With no time to lose, Joe must single-handedly rescue the beloved cave women and find some dinner along the way.
Wait, the Neanderthal nerds took the women and ate the food?
Yes. Yes, they did.
Usually
Neanderthal nerds. That's what nerds do. They'll take your women and your food. Yep.
Back in the day, this is old school. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, that's what it was like back in caveman times. Did you ever play Joe and Mac on the NES?
I didn't. I played it on the Super Nintendo, though.
Yeah, now, on the Super Nintendo, of course, it was called Joe and Mac, because one person played as Joe and the other person played as Mac. Mm-hmm. But as it implies on the back of this box, Mac is off hunting dinosaurs, so it's only Joe. So the game should just be called Joe. It shouldn't even be called Joe and Mac. It should be called Joe.
It's that important Joe and Mac franchise that they established.
Yes, very much so. And the game does even have a two-player mode, but it's alternating, and both players just play as Joe. So.
Oh, well, that's no fun.
Yeah.
It's not like Joe and Mac looked all that... I mean, they couldn't change...
I know, why couldn't they change the sprite for the second player, even if it is alternating?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Oh, well. Anyway, they got outsmarted by a bunch of Neanderthal nerds.
That's right.
What can you expect?
Yep.
Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find CJ at SuperPack. You can contact us by email at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be swell if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks for joining me this week, CJ.
Absolutely.
For myself, Chris Johnston.
Play it loud, people.
And my foul friend, Rivali.
Well, I'll be plucked.
We will see you next time.